with the fiat money experiment that we've had over the past 50 years in particular, saving money hasn't been a very good option because the only real option has been government money, and that's lost value every year through inflation. And so it pushed people out of the savings option and into either spending more money, going to lose value anyway, which is to invest in equities or bonds or property, but ultimately things that most people don't really understand.
Bitcoin solves a critical problem that pensions are facing with the challenge of meeting the obligations they make to their plan members over the extended period into the distant future. This week, we are joined by UK pension actuary Sam Roberts from Cartwright, which was a firm that made waves in, at the end of 2024, announcing a 3% allocation to Bitcoin for their defined benefit pension plans they manage inside their fund. I'm Scott Deedles. I'm the CEO and founder of Block Rewards, and part of our mission in bringing Bitcoin to the workplace is helping people understand how it will help them. Bitcoin solves critical problems for employer-sponsored savings plans and has a big role to play in the future of pensions. Today's conversation is a deep dive into why. I hope you enjoy it. All right, welcome to another episode of the Block Reward podcast. We're talking pensions this week with Bitcoin UK pension fund manager from Cartwright, Sam Roberts. Sam, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Great to be here.
Sam, I've been looking forward to this episode. You and I, we share a common origin story in terms of our journey with Bitcoin, both relating to the important role that Bitcoin plays for the future of survival of pensions. And so we're lots to talk about today. Maybe just a brief introduction of yourself for our listeners before we dive too far into it.
Yeah, sure. So my background... I'm an actuary by background. I've been involved in the pensions industry for 25 years or something. Feels like forever. And so very embedded within that industry. And so it's come for a lot of people, it will come left field for this discussion about Bitcoin. It's not something they'd normally associate with pensions, which makes it all the more interesting, of course.
Yeah, absolutely. You guys made some, national ripples or waves when you announced it was in the sort of the Q4 of 2023 or 2024. Is that right? 3% allocation recommendation for towards Bitcoin inside the pension funds that you manage.
Yeah, we implemented it in October, so it took about a year to get to that point in terms of the discussions with the trustees. Announced it to the market in early November, and November was absolutely crazy with lots of questions and journalists calling up and wanting to understand it more, and clients and potential clients. And yeah, I mean, it was a crazy time in November.
Yeah, so this is a sort of a first of its kind announcement, obviously, in the UK, which is a robust and very mature marketplace for pensions. And I guess, you know, it might be worth, before we start talking too much about Bitcoin, pensions around the world are facing similar problems that have to do with, you know, that have to do with the things that Bitcoin solves. But maybe if you could just give an overview for our listeners of a summary of the challenges, the headwinds that the pensions face today in potentially meeting their obligations and paying out to plan members for how they're banking on it for their retirement.
Yeah, sure. So it's worth differentiating between two different types of pension scheme. So defined benefit pension schemes, and I'm talking corporate pension schemes here. So defined benefit pension schemes and defined contribution pension schemes. So defined benefit is where there is a promise made to the employee that they will get such and such a pension when they retire. And that such and such amount normally relates to the size of their salary when they retire, or when they leave the company, and how many years they've worked for the company. So they get a certain percentage of their final salary. And that's a promise. So that'll be, you do the calculations and that'll be, okay, well, you get then the pension of X thousand pounds a year for the rest of your life from when you retire, let's say age 65 or something like that. Now, because the promise is essentially fixed in pound terms, okay, we'll get some increases probably in line with inflation, but we don't know how much it's going to cost in advance. So there's some uncertainty about how much it will cost. And so there's regular assessments of the pension scheme to work out whether it's got enough money or likely to have enough money or likely to not have enough money. And then maybe the company has to pay some money into the pension scheme, into the trust to get it back on track. And or maybe they need to try and get higher investment returns to close the gap. You know, those are probably the two key levers. So that's defined benefit. We'll probably come back to that a little bit more because that is the type of pension scheme that invested 3%. The other type of pension scheme, the defined contribution or money purchase pension scheme, is one where the employee and the employer put some money in when the employee is working for the company, and then it grows with investment returns, hopefully, and the employee get whatever comes out at the end. So whenever they retire, they look at the pot of money and that's what they've got to retire with. So it's a very different type of pension scheme because the employee is taking the risk that investment returns are not high enough rather than for the defined benefit. It's the employer that's taking the risk. So two very different types. So if we look at where the sort of vulnerabilities or weaknesses in each of those. So defined benefit schemes, I mean, some of them are actually in a very good position because the way that actuaries look at defined benefit schemes is that they try and put a number on the cost of paying all those pensions into the future. Those whatever those X £1,000 has been agreed for each employee into the future. And of course, there's lots of uncertainty because we don't know how long people are going to live. For starters, we don't know what inflation will be. We don't know what investment returns we'll be able to achieve. So there's lots of uncertainty. But you can do some calculations and you can get back, okay, we need such £100 million today to have a really good chance of paying all those pensions. But a lot of those schemes are actually doing quite well. They look in a good position because, I mean, we've had it across the world, but certainly in the UK where government bond yields have gone up. And so when you're discounting back all those future pension payments to today's date, you don't need as much money because yields are higher compared to a few years ago. So a lot of pensions, so maybe 30%, 40%, maybe a little bit more, are actually in a pretty good position. And they're all looking to essentially pass those schemes over to an insurance company and then wind up the scheme. And then the trustees of that pension, that defined benefit pension scheme have done their job. So that's good. The members get the full promise. But there's a lot of pension schemes that are not in as good a position. And that might be because the employers run out of money. Maybe they're still around, but they haven't got any cash to put in. And therefore, they're heavily reliant on getting some investment returns. And then you've got some schemes that are in the middle. So you've got a bit of a mixed bag in terms of the situation these defined benefit schemes are in. So you need to look at it on a case-by-case basis. But that means that some schemes, let's say half of the 5,000 defined benefit schemes in the UK, half of them are in a position where they haven't yet got enough money to pass the scheme over to an insurer. So they need investment returns as part of the solution. And Bitcoin can therefore form part of that as a growth asset. So that's where Bitcoin can fit in for those type of schemes. In terms of those schemes that can afford it, okay, so they're going to pay the benefits, they're going to insure the pensions that have been promised going out into the future. That's fine. But the problem for the members of those schemes might be that, okay, the pension may not increase fast enough to cover inflation or the inflation of what they actually need to buy on a day-to-day basis. Now, that basket of goods and services, which is used to calculate, for example, the consumer prices index, so the sort of official statistic that's used, that may not reflect their actual situation. And therefore, they may get slightly poorer every year as a result. So it's not within the defined benefit scheme's remit to do anything about that necessarily. But those members might want to be thinking outside of the pension scheme, how can they make up that difference every year? So it's quite a long explanation, but hopefully that gives you it's quite a granular, detailed position depending on its precise scheme. The defined contribution situation is that members of those schemes have not really been paying in, as a general rule, not been paying enough money in. So they're going to get a bit of a surprise when they retire, because even if the investment returns have been good, there's probably not going to be enough money in there for them to retire comfortably. So you've got a bit of a time bomb, really, that is appreciated to some extent in the industry, but no real solutions have come up except pay more money in. But of course, and that's probably still part of the solution, to save more money. But the other part of the solution might be to improve the investment returns. And of course, then Bitcoin can potentially play a role for those people, particularly if they're younger. Yeah, and younger people will, or more financially engaged people will be more open as a general rule to Bitcoin. And therefore that could be a serious option. And I think there's going to be a situation for a lot of these defined contribution schemes where they may feel a bit uncomfortable with everyone sort of forcing Bitcoin on their members, on their employees, but they should probably give it as an option. And at the moment they don't. I think they're coming under quite a lot of criticism as a result. And we're probably up to around 60 people or so that since November, people have read, around 60 people that we didn't know before, have got in touch and said, I'm fed up with my XYZ big pension provider. Can I move my pension to your Bitcoin fund? And we don't advise individuals, so we can't help them out, sadly. But it shows that there's quite a lot of frustration out there, and a recognition that Bitcoin could be part of the answer.
Yeah, it's a complicated problem. You know, a few things you mentioned. I think that the dynamics of how pensions work has really shifted as society has changed. And, you know, a few of those things are, you know, 50 years ago, people might have only lived in retirement, you know, retired at 65 and then expected to live another 10 years, you know, and now it's quite normal. People might actually collect a pension for 20, 25 years, maybe more. The number of people retiring versus the number of new people coming into a pension. As you mentioned, that the challenge with returns and the returns as they relate to inflation and keeping in front of sort of a real rate of return that's meaningful for the assets inside the pension. And this is a problem that also exists broadly across the United States with defined benefit pensions. And we had Dom Bay on the show, who's done a lot of work with public service pensions in the U.S. And same sort of idea. I think, you know, with my own work in pensions, you see that members are who are banking on pensions to be sort of a core component of their retirement strategy often find the mechanics of how pensions work. It's complicated. And so it's not easy for people to understand these macro problems. In Canada, we've seen some of the bigger pensions start to get riskier with the kinds of investments they're making to try and stay in front. And maybe a good place to start is how pensions can start to actually think about Bitcoin. You've mentioned it as a growth asset, which I think it is a great place to start. To me, it's a crazy thing that asset managers could look at an asset with a 15-year track record of a compound annual growth rate of 40, 50%, depending on how you want to slice it. And have to debate about whether or not you might want to have some of that in your mix. And you guys settled on 3%. Maybe it's a two-part question. How did you convince your colleagues, or like how was the decision made to get behind adding this just as purely as a top performing asset? And two, why 3%?
Yeah, so there's two levels to it, aren't there? So there's, should we have any Bitcoin at all? And if so, how much? So it's roughly, probably about 15 months ago that we added Bitcoin to our long list of potential asset classes to be considered by our clients. And, you know, there could be a dozen or more different asset classes on there, from different types of property and illiquid assets and equities and bonds and so on. And all we did really was to say Bitcoin should be on the list for consideration. And it's not going to be right for everyone, but it will be right for some. And one of the key determinants is what is their investment time horizon. And the rule of thumb that we were using was, well, if your investment time horizon is at least 4 or 5 years, then we should talk more about Bitcoin. If it's less than that, then it's probably not relevant to you. I mean, if you've only got, you know, 1 or 2 years investment time horizon, then you probably shouldn't be thinking about equities or some illiquid assets or so on, because you'll need the cash from them. So the same principle applies across all assets, including Bitcoin as one of those choices. So in this particular case, the trustees had a 10-year time horizon. And so this was a defined benefit pension scheme, and they've got about 10 years to go until they expect to have enough money to be able to hand, as I mentioned earlier, that sort of action of handing over the scheme to an insurance company. And we did some, I raised it about 15 months ago and said, well, look, your strategy, your investment strategy is in pretty good shape. There's obviously some risks in there, but you need to take some risk to achieve a long-term investment return. However, we've had a recent addition to our long list of asset classes, and that's Bitcoin. So should we talk a bit more about that? And there were some initial raised eyebrows, quite understandably, but then we got into the detail and we gave some training over the following months, for example, on what is money, what is the monthly premium, to help them to understand that. And they got comfortable with having some allocation to Bitcoin. So then the next question is, how much? And so we did some analysis on their scheme with their assets that they already had and said, well, if we put 3%, I think if we put 2, 3 or 4% in Bitcoin, because we thought that's roughly the sort of level to be, you want it meaningful and a meaningful allocation that it makes a difference, but you want not too much that you can't sleep. And so we did some analysis around that. And because Bitcoin is not that correlated with other asset classes, it's a great diversifier. So you start looking at it and say, well, overall, it's got a similar risk according to a model. So you've got to be a little bit careful. You know, every model is wrong. Some are useful, I think is the phrase. The risk maybe went up a little bit or didn't change very much at all, but the expected return went up quite a lot. And what our analysis also showed was the asymmetric risk profile of including some Bitcoin. So remember I said a moment ago that we expect it to take, we did some analysis, expected to take 10 years for them to get to a position where they could hand the scheme over to an insurer. If we then included a 3% Bitcoin allocation and the scenario we modeled was it goes immediately to zero, never recovers, then so it's, you know, it's a very, very worst case scenario. What does that mean for their overall objectives? Well, it means the position's got worse. I mean, you've just lost 3% of your assets, so it's got to get worse. And it meant that that 10-year time horizon went to 10 years, 3 months. So, okay, it's obviously worse, but it's not, you know, it's not going to ruin the scheme or anything. It's surmountable. And then we did the analysis, okay, what if it performs similarly to how it's performed the last few years? And that was you sort of 40, 50% that you meant per year that you mentioned. And then it reduced the time horizon from 10 years to 8 years. So then you can start to see the asymmetric growth profile of including some Bitcoin. And it's like, well, why would you not want to? Unless 10 years, unless an extra 3 months is an absolute disaster for you, why would you not want to buy a little bit and have that potential positive outcome? And so that was then, so we, as I said, we modeled different percentages and settled ultimately on 3% as a reasonable, meaningful allocation.
And so our listeners to the show will know this as well, that Bitcoin is a lot more than a growth asset, which is probably why the investment thesis for a portfolio of assets, owning some, is richer than simply just owning a top-performing asset. How do you describe Bitcoin as an asset, what it is, and why there is such potential for it to be the asset that continues to be beneficial in terms of its price appreciation?
Yeah. Okay. So I'll do the potential bit first, and then we'll come to the different uses of it. So I'll do it in the opposite order. So when we say, what if it performs similarly to the last few years into the future, what need to follow that question up with is, well, does it still have the potential to do that? And so this is where the training on the monetary premium comes in useful, is that we're then looking at sort of it's the black hole theory. So it's looking at these other asset classes. So you've got roughly $900 trillion worth of, probably a bit more now, of assets globally. And that includes equity markets, real estate, bonds, cash, gold. And each of those assets includes some element of monetary premium. And the cash and the gold are then recognized, more recognized as money, they're a bit more obvious. But when we were looking at things like the property or equity markets, and we were looking at some measures of the CAPE ratio, for example, for equities or property values relative to salaries, average salaries, just to see how the relative valuation of those assets has changed over time. And if we look at it, if we go back 50 plus years and compare to now, then roughly those ratios have doubled. So we don't really know, because no one knows what the monetary premium is within these assets. But it looks like maybe roughly half could be monetary premium, which would be staggeringly high. But not a surprise, because we've used those assets as stores of value for the last 50 years because there hasn't been anything else. And so you then look at, okay, let's say Bitcoin takes such and such percentage of that monetary premium. You can get to £1 million per Bitcoin pretty easily. You know, could even go higher than that. So obviously put your finger in the air and decide what percentage of the monetary premium you think will be absorbed by Bitcoin. But let's say you can get to some pretty high numbers pretty quickly. So that shows that those numbers are not guaranteed. It's not guaranteed to get to £1 million per coin, but we're not talking about the worst case scenario. We've already dealt with that in the what if it goes to zero. We're talking about what's the potential for it. We're looking at downside, we're looking at upside. And so that tends to give a lot of comfort, and I think is a reasonable analysis. If Bitcoin succeeds, it could get to some high numbers.
Yeah, we did a great episode about this back in the spring with Papa Suguri, who has a similar background and was involved in building this pension portfolio calculation tool called Nakamoto Portfolio, which I believe is still up at nakamotoportfolio.com. And he was talking about this concept of Frankenstein asset classes and all of these. As you mentioned, the monetary premium is the difference between what these things are worth and then just the amount of money that these things have absorbed as a result of the endless printing of money, and sort of what's really become the hyper-financialization of assets. As everyone, you know, I think about it like, it's like we're all sort of, you know, scrambling to get off the sinking Titanic, and the Titanic is the financial system, and we're just trying to find places to protect our money. But it's been going on for so long that we don't even actually think about it as weird, because as the numbers get bigger, everyone still has, you know, some hope or feeling that they are outrunning the debasement of money as the appreciation of assets is sort of somehow offsetting it. But these are massively complicated problems. You know, I couldn't agree with you more. I think that, you know, one of the biggest things that people who are thinking about Bitcoin, particularly the pension asset, it's the idea that, you know, in terms of Bitcoin's ability to become a Frankenstein asset, like it can it absorb money and why? And if you're thinking about Bitcoin, say, compared to real estate, just to pick out one example, you know, people invest in real estate with the hopes that it'll appreciate in price. But along with that risk comes, you know, tenants and maintenance and taxes and just jurisdictional, you know, differences. You know, so just as a side by side, Bitcoin doesn't require any of that. It's basically just this hard money, digital hard money that's been designed to kind of effortlessly endure and appreciate without really needing to do much. It's a very elegant solution for assets. And I guess I might want to just get your take around that. You know, the next thing I think is often people, when they're evaluating Bitcoin, particularly, you know, and this is a really important problem for pensions, need to consider risk. And the most important thing that pensions are, you know, they have an obligation and a duty to sort of honor these commitments that people are counting on for their retirement. And the perception that Bitcoin is risky has a lot to do with the history it has of having large drawdowns in its price, which I think people often confuse with risk in terms of the risk that Bitcoin, as you mentioned, might vanish completely or go to zero tomorrow. So maybe like, what's your take on what is the risk if we're trying to think about Bitcoin's relative risk as an asset? How should we be thinking about it or describing that?
So, I mean, this is all part of the conversation and part of the training that we have with trustees. The reason why you want to have a long investment time horizon, as long as possible, but I'd say 4 or 5 years or longer as a rule of thumb, is to mitigate any short-term volatility. And so if you want to, with an asset like this, you want to be taking on purpose risks that you think you'll get rewarded for and not taking other risks that there's no upside for you. So you want to be taking the volatility risk, because that's what's giving you want that pure exposure to to Bitcoin, to the price, because that's what you think will do well over a number of years. We don't want to take risk on is having your Bitcoin with a custodian and they fall over and you lose it, or, you know, not holding your keys properly, or, you know, some custodial type risk. There's no upside in playing games with that that side of it. So it's important to minimize, and that's the solution that we worked on with OnRamp to help them to make sure. I mean, they'd already were pretty good position anyway, but we helped them to with a few other things around it to make sure that it was, the solution was institutionally ready. And so what we're doing there is say that you've got near zero. I have to say near zero because I'm a consultant and I can't guarantee anything in this world. But you get near zero counterparty risk, and certainly much better than holding it with an exchange or through an ETF. So it's levels better than that. And then the trustees can just focus on the risk that they should be taking, which is the price. So that's part of it. The other part of it is going back to how much do you have of it? And so I'm getting comfortable with, even if it falls over, you're still okay. And so that's why 3% for this scheme was seen as a reasonable, meaningful position. But for others, it could be lower, it could be higher. It just very much depends on the case by case basis.
Pensions have, we mentioned that pensions have gotten a lot more diversified in their approach to delivering returns. And that has come with really more risk over time. There was a time when pension funds were funded basically entirely with bonds, and some even, government bonds, like purely government bonds. So over time evolved into a mix of equities and bonds. And there's a challenge with the market for value, of government issued debt as governments become more indebted and are going to, potentially have a challenge in finding ongoing buyers for the issuance of new debt. And this is something that countries where the currencies have failed or done a lot worse than the Western world, this is a scenario that's already played out many times. What are your thoughts around fixed incomes and pensions? You mentioned that that rising yields have in the short term sort of shored up cash positions, but I guess it, the question may be better put as, if we're thinking about what the next 20 years look like in a world where Bitcoin sort of continues to evolve and mature, where do you think pensions will go as they continue to need to evolve to meet the needs of their plan members?
Yeah, oh, that's good. So one of the issues that we've got, and I sort of alluded to it a little bit earlier, is even if someone's got a defined benefit pension, that doesn't mean they're 100% watertight against the risks associated with government overspending. So, and inflation that flows from that. So yields going higher, that probably doesn't make much difference either way to the members, but the yields are going higher probably because inflation is higher, either the monetary inflation or the money supply inflation is higher. Maybe the index looks as though it's not increasing as fast, like the consumer prices index. But either way, a lot of pension schemes either have fixed pension increases or they have inflation up to a cap. So typically, it might be 2.5% or 5%. This is what we have in the UK. So if inflation is coming in at, more than 5%, then those members' pensions are not keeping up with prices. Price-wise, and therefore their standard of living is worsening. So DB schemes worked quite well in a world where inflation was relatively low, which was for some historical periods. But given where governments are now with their debt loads, with the propensity to pay off those debt loads with printing more money, with inflation, they're not going to be as robust. Defined benefit pensions are not going to be as robust. Similarly, if you look at the defined contribution side, okay, a lot of it will be invested in equities. But then, I mean, it depends exactly which equities you're invested in, but the equity prices, including dividends, may only go up roughly in line with monetary inflation, the money supply inflation. So they're not really gaining ground. They're sort of keeping pace, maybe, but they're not really gaining ground. Of course, that's on the assumption that we don't see a see a big slug of that monetary premium come out of equities and go into Bitcoin. So if they're trying to make up ground through investment, taking investment risk, they're not really achieving it through equities or property. They're just struggling to keep up. So it needs something else. It needs something else to give them a boost. I mean, thinking longer term, you know, if we look at, you know, what, so one example is if you go back to 150 years or so, you'd have three things that people could do with their money. They'd spend it, save it, or invest it. Keep things nice and simple. Now, most people wouldn't have had any left over to invest, and that would have been very complicated. They wouldn't have understood it. So they'd been spending it or saving it, and saving it probably would have been gold coins or something, or maybe it's silver coins or copper coins, depending on exactly where you are in the world and exactly what period. So, but the point is, you've just got spending and saving, not investing, because investing is hard work and it's complicated. And with the advent, with the fiat money experiment that we've had over the past 50 years in particular, saving money hasn't been a very good option, because the only real option has been government money, and that's loss of value every year through inflation. I'd argue that gold is within that savings bucket as well. And so it pushed people out of the savings option and into either spending more money, going to lose value anyway, or the price is going to go up anyway, I might as well just go on holiday. I might as well buy a bigger house or something like that. Or the other way, which is to invest in equities or bonds or property. But ultimately, things that most people don't really understand. And they are quite complicated. And so we've had this, you've got the three buckets, and they've moved out to that middle bucket in each direction as a result, which isn't very good, because we buy stuff we don't need and we're investing in stuff we don't understand. So with the creation now of a better form of money, the better form of savings in Bitcoin, that then provides a solution for this middle bucket. And so what I expect to see, possibly gradually, possibly suddenly, is money from the spending and the invested buckets to come back into the savings bucket. And I think we're already seeing some of that, and I expect that to continue. So that means we won't buy stuff we don't need, which will be good from a general economic point of view as well. If you understand Austrian economics and you realize that we want people for the future prosperity, more people saving is a good thing. And we don't need people investing in stuff they don't understand. Obviously, some people will still invest. Some of them are still buying equities, probably in particular. So that's a quite interesting area. So what does that mean then in terms of the future of pensions? Well, I think one of the things that we've got used to in particular over the last 50 years or so is a sort of general expectation that counterparty risk can be solved by creating more money. So if, and obviously it doesn't always happen in this way, but I think there's a general expectation that if the economy, something going wrong with the economy, you know, we're going through a business cycle, a recession, the central bank can print more money and magically rescue us from that recession. And therefore, if you've got investment in a company, or you've got investment in a defined benefit scheme that need some cash from that sponsoring employer, then they'll still be around, so you'll still be okay. So we've got, I think, complacent. And the reality of the world is that counterparty risk is real. And we should be thinking more about it. And it would be, and there is no guarantee in this world that, you know, things will be, companies or organizations that will be around forever to make good on their obligations. There is a chance that they won't be. And therefore, if you are someone that's looking ahead into the future, I want to have a source of funds to pay for my retirement, and that maybe that's 30 years. Well, how many companies can you guarantee will be around in 30 years? But instead, if you've got a form of money, like we used to have, you know, gold was used. If I've got a gold coin now, I'd expect to have a gold coin in 30 years' time. And the same, I think, with a deep level of understanding of Bitcoin, you'd have the same confidence that if I've got some Bitcoin now, then I'd expect to have some, this, and you'd have the same percentage of the 21 million, importantly, in 30 years' time. And therefore, you could spend that over that period of time. And so I expect us to move more and more to where a pension is really just, you buy some Bitcoin. And that might sound really simplistic, but that's why it's a good thing. So I imagine, so it's not going to be right for everyone, but for most people, you know, in 20 or 30 years' time, I wouldn't be surprised if most people, their pension arrangements are just buying a bit of Bitcoin every month and then and having the confidence that that will then last them through. And of course, at some point, we talked about short-term volatility, but at some point, we anticipate that it will come to a point. I mean, this could be, you know, 30, 40 years ago, away, who knows, where Bitcoin has addressed that market share. It's got to its global market share that we might expect. And therefore, it will then just increase maybe a little bit faster than, or maybe in line with the global economy each year, roughly. And I think that will give a lot more certainty to people than what they've currently got. And therefore, I'd expect a natural migration in that direction. But it's going to take decades for people to use.
Yeah, beautifully said. You know, I think this is such a huge thing that we've been trapped in this fiat money experiment just long enough that people really have lost track of the concept that really, you know, our grandparents or our grandparents' parents, they would have had money that was just saved. And there wasn't this perpetual need to grow that money, really to gamble that money with the hopes of growing it, that you might outpace the devaluation of that money. And I think to echo your sentiment, Bitcoin is a savings technology. My mind is Apex savings technology because of its uniformity. It's sort of like the metric system of saving. And it's very interesting to think about the idea that the future of saving for retirement could be simply whatever amount of your earned wages you're able to just set aside and store safely in this timeless internet protocol that we now have access to.
Yeah, and some of the inspiration for my thinking there does come from Saifedean Ammous, and obviously you'll be familiar with him. But when he says things like you have to work during the day as a doctor or whatever your job is, and then you have to be a hedge fund manager at night to keep the value of your savings. It is silly. It's been unavoidable, but it is silly. And the sooner we can get to a position where things are simpler and people can focus on what they're, you know, really good at, which is, you know, being a doctor or whatever their day job is, that's going to be better for society as a whole.
I couldn't agree more. Sam, you guys are doing some important work, and I applaud your trailblazing on a very, very important leap forward in what I think is a critical part of the employment relationship, and something that has been kind of a bedrock for people's planning for the future. So congratulations, and I want to thank you again for coming on the show. Maybe just as we wrap up, any sort of final thoughts on maybe Bitcoin in 2025 and where we're headed in the short term?
I mean, there's lots of moving parts at the moment in some countries more than others, but it looks like things are coming together for a very exciting year. I think there's been a lot of things that have been built over the past 2 or 3 years, generally, I'm not just talking about us, but they should come together. And I think one of the messages that I'd really like to emphasize is that we got to a point now for institutional investors where they should make an active decision whether they include Bitcoin or they don't in their portfolio. I don't think it's acceptable any longer to say, oh, it's just something, it'll disappear, it's a fad, it'll go away, I'll put my head in the sand. That I don't think that's any longer an option. That, again, doesn't mean it's right for everyone, but I think an active decision should be taken on it. And they should be, the people in charge of that pool of money should be asking their advisor, why? Why have we not got any? Should we have any? And they may have a very good answer, and that's fine. Or if they don't have an answer, then that should raise some alarm bells.
Absolutely. Sam, thank you again. This has been a ton of fun, and we'll have to have you back on the show at some point in the future to talk about the continual evolution of your offering in the UK and perhaps beyond. And if you're listening to the show and you made it all the way to the end of the episode, I want to thank you as well for tuning in, and we hope to see you again next week.
Thanks for listening to this episode of The Block Reward. We're trying to do something different here, creating accessible conversations meant for people who aren't obsessed with Bitcoin. If you found this episode informative and engaging, hit that subscribe button to make sure you stay updated with future episodes. Your feedback matters. We'd greatly appreciate it if you could take a moment to share your reviews and help us with our goal of creating Bitcoin content that is simple and easy to understand. Bitcoin has an important role to play in the future of finance. It will change the way we save, spend, and invest. Discover why Bitcoin offers a game-changing opportunity for forward-thinking employers by visiting blockrewards.ca. BlockRewards' mission is helping Canadian employers implement strategies for integrating Bitcoin into compensation and benefits, supercharge your recruitment and retention strategies, and help your team members plan for the rising cost of living by rewarding their work with the hardest money ever invented. Special thanks to our top sponsor, Paramount Employee Benefits Consulting, Canada's only Bitcoin-forward benefits and pension advisory. For more information, find them at paramountbenefits.ca. Big shout out to Podigy, our production team that makes all this possible, and VMX Escape for producing our music. Bitcoin is an expansive and dense topic many people walk away from early. To Bitcoin enthusiasts looking for that podcast they can share with friends, family, and colleagues, one they'll actually listen to, we hope that is us. The content of these conversations is meant to be provided for information purposes only. Nothing here is investment advice. Bitcoin is a big topic. Be sure to do your own research before making any personal financial decisions. Thanks for listening.